I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, Seattle is self-imploding. Will voters try to save it? Plus, blatant efforts to stifle media coverage of Hamas sympathizers. And Sound Transit says it will start to actually enforce fares. Sort of. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here for our final live show of the week. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I know it's a very difficult, difficult mission to be a part of some days. The city of Seattle is self-imploded. And I really believe what we're seeing is cause and effect. We are seeing now the unfortunate result of policies that we knew were bad to begin with, at least those of us who aren't highly ideological. We are seeing the unfortunate but realistic result, the expected result of policies that were built on identitarianism, policies that were meant to make just a small number of fringe activists feel good, policies that were pushed because fringe activists would show up on the second floor of City Hall and just scream and whine until they got their way. And you had absolute gelatinous backbones of city council members that gave way to them. And so unfortunately, what you're seeing is a downtown Seattle that is in a state of ruin and that I don't see getting better unless there is a significant change of course when it comes to the quote unquote leaders who voters are putting in office. And so you might not think that this story is the end all be all, but it is symptomatic of a pattern and of the continued downfall of a once great city. So in the Seattle Times today, the announcement that PCC is going to close its downtown Seattle store due to what they're saying is poor sales. Of course, there's a lot of contributing factors to poor sales, because why would a grocery store in the heart of a city that has not very many grocery stores, why would that grocery store not be able to succeed financially? There's really no reason for it except that everything around it isn't succeeding financially. Everything around it is having an issue thriving because of policies. And so again, it's symptomatic, according to the Seattle Times, and what PCC says the rationale is, with remote work still reducing the number of workers downtown and with fewer than expected downtown residents, the PCC was never able to generate the kind of foot traffic or sales necessary to turn a profit, co-op officials said. Quote, based on these dramatically changed shopper demographics and habits, PCC sees no viable path to operating a profitable full-service grocery store at this location, the co-op said in a statement on Wednesday. Despite an amazing team, fantastic store conditions, and a supportive landlord, our downtown store has unfortunately remained unprofitable, and we do not see that changing for the foreseeable future, their CEO said in this statement. Reaction to this has been swift. There's a lot of people, and there are people who live downtown, and like I said, there are not a lot of options for them to actually go to a brick-and-mortar grocery store, certainly one they can walk to, and so I was seeing online a lot of people angry about this for that reason. But it's also not good for the economic vitality of the city. Councilwoman Sarah Nelson, one of the only council members in Seattle with a good head on her shoulders, I wish we had 8 more of her. She said, this is terrible news for downtown. And I'm sure I speak for many downtown workers to say nothing of neighborhood residents when I say thank you, PCC, for serving us. And I'm sorry to see you go. Grocery stores have narrow margins as it is, and independent stores have even less reserves to weather the market forces driving up the cost of business. This is a sobering reminder that city officials must do everything we can to ensure that conditions within our purview contribute to a thriving business climate, starting with public safety. And I agree with her. I mean, there's a plethora of things going on here. Public safety is absolutely one of them. I mean, do people feel safe actually walking into a grocery store, walking to a grocery store in downtown Seattle, shopping there? We know that all retail environments have had an issue with widespread retail theft, which is fueled by the drug crisis, retail theft rings that are certainly, a grocery store is not immune from that. But there's one other big glaring thing, and that has been an anti-business climate. You know, one thing that was mentioned in this story, but also is clearly a causing factor, this PCC is in a building that should have been occupied by a bunch of Amazon workers. But there was news, this was back in February of 2019, that this particular building Amazon abandons plans to occupy huge downtown Seattle office building. It says that, again, this is from the 2019 article. Scheduled to open next year, the $570 million Rainier Square Tower project will be the second tallest building in the Pacific Northwest at 58 stories. It will also include luxury apartments and a hotel, as well as a PCC Community Markets on the ground floor. So here you had Amazon that was intended, supposed to be occupying this gigantic office building, which certainly would have brought a lot more customers into the PCC to make it profitable. And why did Amazon opt not to do that? Well, the same reason that Amazon decided to start pulling workers out of its Seattle location and sending them over to Bellevue, or opening job openings in Bellevue as opposed to Seattle, reducing its footprint in Seattle. Because of not just an anti-business climate in Seattle, but a vilification of Amazon for the past 8 years, the repeated efforts to tax Amazon, which ultimately were successful. The city council had tried what they called a head tax on big business, to fine big business essentially for every employee that it had. The council eventually passed that. They had to roll it back and undo it. And then in 2020, right when the city was recovering from Chaz Chop and in the midst of this summer of love, as the mayor called it, with all these riots and looting, while the city was focused on all of that, what did the council do? Well, they used that environment, that political environment, to push through a tax on high-paying jobs, completely under the radar, because everybody else was distracted by the other craziness happening in the city. And what was a tax on high-paying jobs really about? It was about taxing Amazon. And so, I mean, if you can't see the cause and effect of all this, and reasonable common sense people, they saw this as it was happening. They saw the slow motion train wreck that was going to come. So this really isn't a surprise to anyone with a lick of common sense. You vilified the city's largest employer repeatedly. You targeted them out repeatedly. When they passed the tax on high paying jobs, what did Amazon do? They didn't try to fight it. They didn't put out a press release condemning it. They just started moving jobs to Bellevue, and they started increasing their footprint in a city that they thought would be a better partner with them. And actually, that's working out great for Bellevue, not so great for Seattle. So they, in 2019, while they're being vilified, they decide, because 2019, it was before the tax on high-paying jobs, but it was after, you know, many years of the Seattle City Council vilifying Amazon and the decline of the downtown environment, which was also happening, by the way, before the pandemic. And so Amazon said, hey, we're not going to occupy this huge downtown office building that's going to have a PCC on the bottom floor. And then what happens? Okay, 4 years after that, the PCC now saying, hey, we're not getting enough business to be able to operate. So the anti-business animus, the anti-Amazon animus, is responsible in large part for this. But yeah, also the crime. Also the fact that downtown Seattle just doesn't feel like a very visitable location still. And that has not changed substantially. And I'm not saying Mayor Bruce Harrell hasn't done some things to try to improve that, but we don't have enough police officers to have a frequent police presence in these areas to make it feel safe for people. I mean, how many horrible stories have we done of regardless of what the gray-haired lady with the green coat said on Fox News, how many stories of random acts of violence have we seen downtown? So yeah, and this is what I'm worried about too. What's next? What's next? I've said it before, and I really pray it's not the case. Nordstrom's. Is it Nordstrom's or Nordstrom? Didn't we already have the debate?
Yes.
No S. You think I shop there enough to know there's no S. Nordstrom, downtown. I would not be surprised if we're hearing about Nordstrom closing in the next couple of years. I have no inside knowledge of that, but Target on 2nd Avenue. Again, there. I mean, half the time I go down there, it's all boarded up because windows were broken. The level of shoplifting there is absolutely insane. I've gone in there and, like, you just see people openly who you're like, okay, obviously they're filling that cart and they're just going to push it out. It's insane. So, and then what, you know, when you lose these places that really are anchors, it was when, remember when Starbucks closed there across from Westlake Park? That was kind of an anchor in that area where there was actually business coming in and people would go there and it was a destination. You'd meet by the Starbucks at Westlake Park, and then they had to close and they cited crime. Come on. I mean, this isn't This isn't rocket science. If there's any council member or the mayor, anyone who wants to deny what's going on here, this isn't just decisions made in the last year or two or the pandemic. This is a decade worth of decisions that's catching up to a once great city. It's going to take forever to unwind, but you have to start somewhere. And I think you start with, if you care about the city, Seattleites. I wish I could vote in Seattle. I don't live there anymore. There's a reason for that. But if you can vote prioritizing, yes, people who share your values, all the candidates share your values. They're all just different shades of blue. But people who also want to make sure the city thrives. And it's breaking my heart to see those candidates, you know, vilified. Right-wingers called Republicans. It's just stupid. It's like, no, they're Democrats. And is it really a Republican value to want there to be economic viability? Is it really a Republican value to want public safety? It's kind of funny when you think about it, that like any Democrat who dares prioritize public safety or want to be friendly to businesses big and small, that, oh, they must be a Republican. Oh, well, that makes being a Republican sound very, very good. Very like rational and common sense. It's just wild stuff. But I think this goes into, so you look at what's happening in downtown Seattle. It goes into our next story. We talked about it. We teased it on the show yesterday. It was the subject of our daily subscriber poll yesterday, where Mayor Bruce Harrell came out in the morning and he announced this executive order to try to help small businesses, but specifically, more so, small businesses that are owned by someone who's a person of color or who's a woman. And I've made my opinion on that very clear. I don't think the city of Seattle, and the last story we did is proof of this, can afford to be picky. Like, you're only going to let a grocery store in there if they're owned by someone who has the right skin pigmentation? Like, no, of course. You're not going to care. You just want a grocery store to replace PCC. So from the mayor's office, Mayor Harrell issues executive order expanding city contracting equity, supporting women and minority-owned small businesses. Okay. Which on its face, like, huh, I want all small businesses to be supported, certainly. But you are in a climate right now where you really can't afford to be picking and choosing, you know, what businesses you're going to do contracts with. You got it. I mean, good luck even finding businesses that want to contract with the city. But there was a couple things that Mayor Harrell said in the video that just really, or in his press conference, in his remarks, that really just stood out to me. So let's listen.
Now, this is not on my script, and I'm going to get in trouble by saying this. But when I was a young attorney, and that may shock you that either that I was an attorney or I was young, either way it might be shocking for me to say that, and I was obviously a person of color, when I would go to clients and pitch my services and pitch members of my firm who also were African American and women, I would say, hire us because we're the best. We're tenacious. We had to work with limited resources. We had to fight through impediments to get to college and law school or these experiences. Hire us because we're the best. And by the way, we hire from people in our community. We hire voices that are underrepresented. All I want is an opportunity. I'm not asking for special treatment. I'm asking for equal treatment. I just want to get my foot in the door. And quite frankly, my phone would ring off the hook. And I would never blame anyone for the racism and the unfairness in society. There's a lot of blame to go around. I'd say, hire my company because we are the best. And so I advise you, as your unpaid lawyer, that you are the best by virtue of having the common sense to be here today.
What? I don't know what any of that means, except it seems like he's kind of undercutting the whole point of his executive order, saying that when he used to be in this law firm, he'd go to people and say, hire me because I'm the best, not hire me because I'm black. So isn't that what you're doing here with these city contracts is you're prioritizing people based on skin color and based on their gender, not whether they're the best? That just makes no sense to me. And then this next part, and again, I'm critical of the mayor when I need to be critical of him, but I don't think he's the worst mayor Seattle's ever had. And sometimes, though, I feel like he says the right things and then there isn't enough follow through. But I gotta say, this next clip really, really bothers me in light of the last story that we talked about.
And quite frankly, if you're not doing that, and if you're doing this just to line your pockets, just to make money, that's it. I have no interest in you. I'm gonna repeat that. There has to be a greater good that you're trying to do. I am trying to employ people as the mayor. I'm trying to get people emotional help. I'm trying to build networks. If you are just caring about, if you just care about lining your pockets with money, this may not be the executive order for you.
It's just this guy. So he's basically saying you have to be in it to be a good, you know, giving back to the community, and you can't just be in it for the money. So what about the other way around? You know, you want these businesses to be working toward a better community, not just coming in. You want these contractors to be working toward a better community. What are you doing for them? What are you doing for the businesses in town? You're scaring them away. You're making an environment so utterly toxic that it's impossible for them to turn a profit. And then you want to go to contractors and you want to go to businesses and say, you can't just be in it for the money. You got to be in it to make the city a better place. Meanwhile, City Hall is absolutely sucking the life out of the city. It's a leech on the business environment. And now you want to go to them and demand that they be a better business, that they're not just in it to line their pockets, that they're in it to make the city a better place. How dare you? Like, I'm sorry, that's utterly insane. That's so ridiculous. That is such an insane sentiment. If the city was good to businesses, then what you want from them, a business that's invested, that will come naturally. If politicians, the mayor's office, the city council, if they foster a positive environment for businesses, for contractors, then inherently those businesses, those contractors, they are going to feel some sort of civic responsibility to return that sentiment, to help the city that has done so much for them, the city where they found a productive place. And so the fact that you want so much from them and you expect so much from them and you give them not jack in return is emblematic of why we're in this position to begin with. So while you have city or businesses big and small fleeing the city of Seattle, they just can't make it work, whether it's crime, whether it's taxes, whether it's just the overall erosion of downtown that has made their business model not viable. So while you have that, then you have the city of Seattle turning around and saying businesses need to do better for their community. Businesses need to be here not just to line their pockets. Prioritizing businesses based on the color of the skin of the person who owns it, the gender of the person who owns it, rather than saying, hey, if you got a good business, come to the city of Seattle. We want to put you in some of these empty storefronts downtown. We want to give you contracts with the city. If you're going to come, we want you. We need you. It's all just, it's so backward. And it's the exact wrong way of thinking, truly. And Seattle voters, I mean, 6 days from now, 5 days from now, I don't know at what point it's past the point of no return, but if you can be seeing these headlines and not realize that we really need to prioritize politicians who understand that our business climate is not good, that the public safety climate is not good, I mean, I guess you get what you vote for, but it impacts the rest of us too. Everyone outside the city of Seattle is impacted by its decline. All right, I've been talking about our friends at First Mark Insurance and how I just really think you should take the First Mark Challenge. You could save money, you could get better insurance, you could get both, and it's free. You never pay First Mark for their services at all. It just takes a little bit of investment of your time to talk to them. You can do it virtually about your insurance needs. They'll go out and shop the market for you. And as Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, points out, you know, yeah, you might be able to go with one of those companies that says they could get you a quote really, really fast and get you a low price, but are you going to get good insurance, and are you going to, more importantly, get good service?
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate, and it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, 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 right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't. Okay. No. Yeah. But you're going to, and it's a local company too, which I think is really helpful. Dave, he's a Marine veteran, and I think their customer service and how much they value your money, which is something we don't see a lot from the government these days. That's a total other subject. It's just honestly worth taking an hour, setting it aside, doing the First Mark Challenge and seeing what they can do for you, what they can do for your insurance needs, but also seeing the difference in customer service versus some national company where you're going to have to go through a phone tree. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Insurance.com. They work for you. All right, there are some really unbelievable efforts underway to try to stifle reporting about Hamas sympathizers, both locally and nationally. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right. So there have been a lot of what I would call pro-Hamas rallies in Seattle, and I just don't know how to characterize it any other way. And I do know that there's a difference between wanting to make sure that there isn't an innocent loss of life in Gaza versus people who actually support the actions of terrorists and who want to erase Israel as a state. What we're talking about is the latter. So Jonathan Cho, our fierce friend, independent journalist who works for Discovery Institute, he was down at one of these at Westlake Park, and he had done some reporting on it previously, but now he's resurfacing some of the video because he is now the subject, Jonathan Cho is, of a temporary order of protection from an individual who he encountered at one of these protests. So what I want to do is play a 1 minute 45 chunk of video that Jonathan Cho has posted in light of this being served at his home in Bellevue with this order of protection, because you're going to see how, and I'll let me just play it, and you can make your own characterization. But the individual who's, you'll hear at the beginning, sort of shouting at him and trying to catch up with him, and then sort of following Jonathan and as Jonathan tries to leave the area, that is the person who ultimately has served him with his protection order. So why don't you watch just this clip, and then we'll talk about it on the back end.
Hello, bro.
Yeah, you're right.
You know there's a kid right next to you? Just want to let you know there's a young child, all right?
On the way.
Thank you so much.
There you go, Johnny. What's up, dude?
My shot. Thank you.
Johnny, wait, come on. Hold up. Hi, buddy. What's my name, Johnny? Johnny, Johnny, what's up, dude? Johnny Show, I'm so glad you're here, bro.
Hey, you know you're touching me?
I'll give you one more warning.
Okay? Don't touch me again.
Johnny, try to do the thing again where like, oh.
As long as you don't touch me, it's all good.
I didn't touch you. My sign's out. My sign's out, buddy. You touched me.
Nope, as long as that. As long as the sign doesn't touch me.
Oh, are you running this way? So you start running the cops? Oh, he's chasing me.
Are they going to trigger you? How's your trans agenda going?
Funny.
Yeah.
Are you doing the thing again where you're like, oh, run, Johnny's chasing me. I'm getting chased again. Oh,
look at all the far left. Look at all the National Lawyers Guild people.
Guys, you saw it here first. Johnny Cho chased by the evil Antifa. You saw it here first, folks.
Trans ideology, baby. Trans ideology. You know you go to Gaza, you get killed. You get killed in Gaza.
Yep. Johnny Cho and tracked by trans Tifa, guys.
Yep. You get
Johnny
killed
Cho
in Gaza.
Johnny Cho tracked by trans Tifa. What? You saw it here first for everyone. It's hard to see.
If you went Johnny to Gaza, Cho you'd be killed. You'd be killed in Gaza. By the Muslims.
No, I would be killed, but I would be killed.
Hey, thanks for like assaulting me now.
Okay. So a few things. I will say there's some things Jonathan says in that video that I don't particularly agree with. I mean, so he had had a previous encounter with this man whose name is Gabriel Jones at a, you remember when we did a story on 5599 and how there were some counter protesters who I believe broke the law, not when they protested us, but it was a different instance. Well, Jonathan Cho had an interaction with Gabriel Jones there. And so he brings up sort of the trans agenda. I just wish he wouldn't do that because I think it just kind of further, you know, complicates and confuses the situation. He also was telling him you'd get murdered in Gaza by the Muslims, and I think that's unfair. I don't think Muslims by nature are murderous people. You could say you'd get murdered in Gaza by Hamas. Anyway, I just thought I would note that. But anyway, so Jonathan, you know, covers this. We had shared some of his coverage on the show. Then he's home one day, sitting at home in Bellevue, and he gets served by the Bellevue Police Department with a temporary protection order and hearing notice from this guy, Gabriel Jones. And just, there's so much in this. So anyway, this Gabriel Jones writes his own narrative of what happened as justification for this temporary protection order, which also sets a hearing date of November 14th. It says, I was a part of a team that does security. So this is Gabriel Jones's words. I was a part of a team that does security at a protest first of all, a part of a team that does security? No, you're there to protect the protesters, and you're just trying to prevent people like Jonathan Cho from filming your utter hatred. I saw Mr. Cho, who was previously informed he was not welcome. Okay, you're at a public park. You don't have any authority to inform anyone that they're not welcome there. He was not welcome, and he was asked to leave. Again, you have no authority to ask someone to leave. Upon seeing him, I used my sign to block his camera and told him to leave. Again, you don't have any right to tell him to leave. With his consent, I followed him. What are you talking about? Why would Jonathan Cho give you consent to follow him? He just told he said, as long as you're not touching me, that's fine. Right. I don't know if that's consent, but he's basically saying, don't assault me. And Jonathan knows, because he's a journalist, that he can't prevent them from being there and trying to block their sign. I followed him away from the protest. During the walk, he said, if you were in Gaza, they would cut off your head. And then he goes, da 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 da, and said I was spreading violent trans ideology. His handwriting is so bad, it's hard to read. As we were walking, he suddenly stopped, and because I was right behind him, I stepped on his shoe. Because of this, he took my glasses off my face and ran away because I needed to see. I chased him to get my glasses back, after which he punched me in the face. Okay. So he's saying that's his version of events, and he's filing this order of protection. Now, I have Jonathan's response to those claims, but what I will tell you is, based off of seeing the video, here you have, again, this protester who is under the notion that he, as self-appointed security, can tell a member of the media to leave a public park, which is ridiculous. And we cut off a little bit at the beginning of the video, but he's the one seeking Jonathan Cho out. He is following Jonathan Cho around. At every juncture, Jonathan Cho is trying to film, and he's just trying to move away from this guy. And this guy is simply not allowing him to move away from him. And so Jonathan Cho says, because we reached out to him and said, hey, did you punch this guy in the face? Cho told us just a couple minutes ago via text, think about it. Someone is chasing you in a mob scene. With my back turned, Jones shoved me so hard from behind, I fell out of my shoes. I'm completely disoriented. My goal was to get out of there. Jones was hovering over me as I grabbed my shoe. I stopped recording, put my phone in my pocket, and I pushed him away and ran from the scene. I was defending myself. He calls it a punch. I shoved him away. I'll leave it at that. More will play out in court. Looking forward to the evidence he presents. And there were cops all around. So certainly if there's evidence of Jonathan punching him in the face rather than trying to get him to move back. But I think what this is really is weaponizing law enforcement to try to thwart Jonathan Cho's reporting. To say, so as this, so there's going to be a court hearing. This is just a temporary protection order. It doesn't, as it's written, like say Jonathan Cho has to stay 100 yards away. Because that would be, you know, devastating to his ability to report on any of this. This same protester is at, you know, protests against what I said, 5599 and parental rights, and he's been at a variety of different things. So can you imagine if you have a judge who sympathizes with this protester because maybe of their political ideology, and they grant some sort of actual protection order that makes Jonathan Cho have to stay 500 feet or whatever it is away from essentially any protest, any left-wing protest in the city? I mean, that thwarts his reporting in a serious way. Based on what I've seen in this video, I think Jonathan Cho has more of a right to ask for an order of protection against this guy who was relentlessly pursuing him. And I actually think that this individual should be arrested for filing a false report. I think SPD, the second he ran to the back of Jonathan Cho, should put handcuffs on him. They were standing there. Jonathan Cho was trying to move away from the situation. He says he pushed him to get distance after that happened. But this is just one of the many ways, and this is albeit a very creative way, indeed, to try to stifle the reporting of someone like Jonathan Cho, who is trying to point out your Hamas propaganda. And that's not all we're seeing. In fact, this Sunday on Sundays with Subscribers, Ari Hoffman is going to be, we're going to have a couple guests, but Ari Hoffman is going to be one of our guests who's Jewish, and he's a host over at KTTH, who's been exposing some of, mostly on college campuses, some of the Hamas sympathizers amongst faculty members. But one of the other things he recently pointed out is CARE, which is the Council on American Islamic Relations. They've put out these messages basically saying it's illegal to dox someone. So they look at people like Ari Hoffman, a member of the media, who is exposing some of these public employees who are spreading terrorist propaganda. And the Council on American Islamic Relations, their concern is protecting those people. Their concern, they're saying basically that's against the law to dox someone in Washington State. So wanting to try to stifle Ari Hoffman's reporting on these public officials by suggesting what he's doing is against the law, which what he's doing is not against the law. And he's a member of the media and he does have a lot of protections. So we're going to see more and more of this. We're going to see blatant attacks, sometimes legal maneuvering, to try to stifle members of the media from exposing this hatred on our college campuses, from exposing this hatred in these leftist circles in Seattle. And I know that people like Jonathan Cho and Ari Hoffman are not going to back down, and we're going to have their back every step of the way. So I don't have to agree with every single tactic Jonathan Cho uses or everything he said. I pointed out a couple things in that video I wish he would have just left alone and not said. But I will absolutely defend his journalism, his right to produce it, his right to be at these protests. I will defend Ari Hoffman's right to expose public employees who are spreading hatred against Jewish people. And I really wish more members of the mainstream media in particular would do the same. We've talked about this before. It's really quite unbelievable the extent to which they stay silent. You know, when Jonathan Cho is being physically blocked from entering press conferences, when media offices and spokespeople who are paid with our money were working together behind the scenes to keep information from him. We spoke out about it because there but by the grace of God go I. If you don't defend Jonathan Cho, what happens if there's someone in office who doesn't like your reporting? Seattle Times, Crosscut, King 5, Como News, Cairo, Q13. And then this is happening to you. I guarantee that you're going to whine about it, and rightfully so. I guarantee that you're going to push back against it. So you all need to get together and see what's happening to Jonathan Cho, to people like Ari Hoffman. And you need to have a united front, even if you don't agree with them politically. Because again, there but by the grace of God, go you. Absolutely unbelievable. All right, I'm going to talk about my success on the East Side Weight Loss Clinic Plan. I get so many good messages from you guys. I got a message from a woman the other day who said she's been hearing me talk about East Side since the beginning of the year. And she finally relented and scheduled her free 15-minute consultation because she said, hey, I can lose weight easily. I just kind of always need someone to tell me what to do. And she also said, like I had, I've yo-yo dieted a lot in my life. I've never been, like, I would say small. Not that you have to be physically small, but I've always been a little heavier since I was a child. And so, you know, when I got into athletics in high school, it was a little bit better. But then I just had these ups and downs where I do all these crash diets. And I've really been able to maintain pretty well my weight loss from Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. And, you know, you have life's ups and downs. I got married and ate and drank to my heart's desire, but you can get right back on the program. So I think it gives you the tools to be able to succeed for life. So if you've been kind of putting it off, don't put it off a day longer because you can have results so quickly on the program. And I love to hear these success stories. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Start by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. You can ask all the questions you want before you commit. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right, let's dip outside of Washington State. For a moment, I thought I'd follow up yesterday. Santos survived. He survived his ouster hearing from NBC News. Rep. George Santos survives vote to expel him from Congress. His fellow New York Republican led the effort to oust him and vowed they might try again this month after the House Ethics Committee announces the next steps in its probe. And look, I've said I'm slightly torn on this. And there were actually some Democrats, by the way, who voted against it, because they said that it starts this slippery slope. If we get into the practice of before someone's criminally convicted, before we have a full ethics investigation, if we vote to oust him. And I think that's why it's been very rare. It's very, very rare for something like this to happen. I had read quotes from Democrats saying, make no mistake, I will absolutely vote to oust him after the ethics investigation if it confirms some of this stuff. So I don't think this is the end of this ordeal for the time being, Congressman George Santos. All right, so I just talked about efforts to thwart media coverage of these Hamas sympathizers. And I gotta love that the New York Post is like, nope, we won't be thwarted. Their front page, I love it. It has the faces of, so you've been seeing all these stories of, so people will put up these missing or kidnapped posters of Israelis who were kidnapped by Hamas. And then you'll see all these lunatics, a lot of this is happening in New York, tearing down the missing person posters, which is like, what's the point of that? If anything, put up missing, if you think that there is, you know, Palestinians in Gaza who are missing or who have been killed in the counterattack by Israel, then put their faces up, put posters right next to them, or put the posters over them for all I care. I mean, I think that would still be a crappy thing to do. But what's the point in tearing down pictures of actually missing, kidnapped, or murdered innocent Israelis other than you hate Jewish people? What would be the point of that? So the New York Post, on their front page, they just absolutely blasted these two young women in the act of tearing down these posters. I mean, you can see their faces plain as day. Anti-Israel activists ripped down hostage posters in petty acts of hate, not a shred of decency. And I mean, I think that's fine. I think when you show such utter hatred toward fellow human beings, toward people of a particular religion, that to me is a hate crime. And you should be convicted of it. You should be prosecuted for it. Again, you could take your own posters and cover them up, and that would be protected by the First Amendment. And I know you're just ripping down posters, but to me, I mean, it shows such a level of hate. So I love that the New York Post is doing that, to be honest. All right, we are going to have an edition of Florida Report this week. Miranda was all for it. We have some good stories out of Florida. Some hilarious stories out of Florida, so we'll get to it momentarily. But if you're thinking about putting your home on the market, go ahead, you know, talk to a few real estate agents, but don't choose one until you've visited Sell with Wes and talk to our friend Wes Jones, because the first thing he's going to do is do a free market analysis for you, which you might be wondering, is this the best time to put my home on the market? And Wes Jones told us when he was in the other day that he actually thinks that despite the state of the economy, there's some good things happening in the housing market.
We should be experiencing not necessarily a crash, but we should be seeing a reduction in purchase price. When you have interest rates jump up by, you know, nearly 40% in over a 12-month time span, that should be compressing pricing, but we're actually seeing the opposite. Prices have come up about 5% since the beginning of the year. And overall transaction count is down, just meaning less houses overall are selling, but they're still selling pretty quickly because there's been a lot of pent up demand, you know, over time. So, it's actually going pretty well, but in general, there are not enough homes on the market to meet demand.
Yeah, so it might not be the worst time to list your home because there is some demand out there. So go to sellwithwes.com. First thing you should do, use their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then reach out to Wes Jones. Get that free market analysis. Let them tell you about their innovative marketing strategy to make sure that when you list your home, it is positioned for success. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, everything from free AK-47s to the booty patrol. Let's talk about it today on Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Hello, Miranda, and your dog, Henny.
Yeah, he's probably going to make an appearance pretty often until he gets over me being home. So.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think it's good. People love dogs. They love it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're getting back to it today. Why not? We'll do some fun ones today, too. So we'll ease back into the serious nature of Florida politics, because you guys also have a debate coming up, which we'll be covering on Florida Report extensively. I want to start, though, with an issue we talk about here. We have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. Florida is not having such a problem. In fact, they're doing quite well with police recruitment.
We are doing quite well. It's been one of DeSantis's biggest kind of movements is just, you know, making sure that we have like a high standard for police officers, but also a lot of respect for them and making sure that, you know, they know that they can come here and they're going to be supported. So he has been able to recruit police officers from all 50 states. Almost 900 new recruits have come in from all over the nation. And they come in, and when you sign, you get a $5,000 signing bonus, and that's even after taxes. So we have plenty of cops here. And it's funny because, you know, I drive around Miami and I don't see cops everywhere, but they're there when you need them. And I think that that's kind of a great way to know that, you know, we're well covered, but it still doesn't feel like a police state to me. So.
Yeah, it's funny though, when you say $5,000 signing bonus, that's actually like chump change compared to the lateral bonuses and the signing bonuses that agencies in Washington state are giving. I mean, we're talking $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, and people still don't want the jobs because their pride is not for purchase. So they'll go to a state like Florida and $5,000, sure, but that's not why they're doing it. That's not why they're doing it. And I think that that's proof of that. All right. Speaking of DeSantis, several news outlets are having a little fun with his choice of footwear.
Yeah, this really bothers me because I just think people's appearances have nothing to do with politics. And they do this to a lot of politicians, but DeSantis wears cowboy boots sometimes. And there's been plenty of politicians and presidents and stuff that wear cowboy boots, but they're saying he does it so he can appear taller. And I just don't understand how this is news.
Well, News Nation did something, Fox did something, the Greg Gutfeld show, and they're saying that there's lifts in the cowboy boots. So not only does he have, because cowboy boots naturally, they've got a little bit of a heel on them, you know, but then they're saying that he's got a lift inside the heel to make him seem even taller, which, I mean, I kind of disagree with what you said about looks have nothing to do with politics. I agree that they don't have anything to do with your ability to do your job. But like looks when it comes to the presidential races have always been something. I mean, since like Kennedy, that people are like, oh, he looks presidential. And so maybe there is something in the mind of voters that's a little bit, you know, not even intentional, where they're sort of like, does that person look like carry themselves like a president? I don't even know how tall Ron DeSantis is. Now I got to Google that. Ron DeSantis.
Well, I had read in an article that even when he played baseball for Yale, I believe the roster said he was 5'11". And to me, that's a few inches above an average male height in America. So I don't know, A, I don't know why he'd want to appear taller. And B, I don't know why it really matters, because most of us, our only interaction with the president is on TV and he's only like 3 inches tall anyway. So as long as they got the right height podium, what does it matter what he looks like?
Yeah, that's funny.
He's got good posture.
I mean, I don't believe when we were in volleyball in high school, they would lie about our height all the time to make us seem scarier than we were. So I don't think he's 5'11". But I also, you know, you want to wear lifts, Ron DeSantis, you do you, man. We'll see at the presidential debate, though. We'll keep a close eye on his footwear.
We can engage when he's standing next to people. We'll be like, okay.
Yeah.
But still.
Really, yeah, hard-hitting stuff the media's focused on these days. speaking of, a couple more fun stories. So so-called assault weapons are banned in Washington state. So if you wanted to buy one here, you couldn't. In Florida, they're just giving them away.
Yeah, if you need a new roof or you're just like, oh, my house needs a new roof, there is a county in Florida that has a roofing company that in the month of November, if you sign up to get a new roof and have them change your roof, you're not only going to get a free turkey, but you will also get a free AK-47.
I love how it's like a turkey and an AK. Although food prices are very high, so that turkey, depending on how fat it is, it might very well be worth as much as an AK-47. Just another example of the reason we do Florida Report, because sometimes it's nice to see just how different another state can be. That's hilarious.
We're pretty out there, let me tell you. And honestly, it'll be funny to see how many people actually decide to go with this roofing company over another one simply because of this promotional offer. You know, it's in our state, I really think they'll probably get some good business out of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you were like getting close to needing a new roof anyway, why not pull the trigger? Oh, you see what I did there? Pull the trigger sooner and then you get some free stuff. Free turkey. Those are expensive these days. All right. One more. I had to laugh at this. So Florida. The headline, a Florida man was cited this week after driving a truck painted similar to the look of a Border Patrol vehicle, but that read Booty Patrol on the back, authorities say.
Yeah, and apparently he's been terrorizing, for lack of a better word, because he's impersonating law enforcement. His truck has been made up to look just like a Border Patrol truck, but it does say Booty Patrol. But he's got red and blue lights, and he's been pulling people over. He's been pulling people over. So as this was happening, before they found him and cited him for the situation, they were getting reports of this, and then they were like, if you've been pulled over by the Booty Patrol truck, please call us and give us information about this guy so we can find him. And they did end up finding him. And I believe he just got cited and not arrested, which is interesting to me. I would think that being impersonating law enforcement would require an arrest, but apparently just a citation is enough. But I wonder if he pulled all the stickers off of his car.
Yeah, or if there's like, they're still investigating. But so was he pulling over like women with nice booties?
It doesn't specify, but I would assume that would be pretty on brand for him to at least just pull over women, because you can't tell what they look like in their vehicles. But either way, it's kind of scary, because anybody could put some red and blue lights on. And as an average citizen, you don't want to like not pull over when you're seemingly being pulled over. But, you know, as much as this guy was probably doing it for like giggles, you know, it's kind of scary to know that people can do this and they maybe are have a little bit more like terrifying motives.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's funny, but I also understand that point. So Miranda, yeah. So nice to see you. You're just looking better every day. Your voice is really still a struggle. It sounds like you're smoking 10 packs a day, but that's
yeah, it is. It is. I had physical therapy this morning and they've been really pushing the weight on me. So physically I'm getting there. Mentally, I'm already there, which is why I told you, I'm like, let's do the show. But my voice is going to take a few weeks to kind of come back. It's struggling a little bit, but
yeah, they're pushing the weights on you. So what are you curling 1 pound now or?
No, I'm up to like, what did we do today? 30 pound curls. And I did 135 pound leg presses. So
you're going to be jacked.
I'm going to be, well, I'm going to have to be rejacked because I lost all my muscle mass. But I'm pretty happy about it. And I've been working with University of Miami Health System to get better. And they've been really pushing me. And I really appreciate their support and making sure that I can get out of there as quickly as possible. So.
I agree. All right. We love you, Miranda. Thank you.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
It's not even controversial anymore. I have a correction to make. Man, I said Ari Hoffman works for KTTH. I've done this before. Well, you get two stations, very similar. They both start with Ks. KTTH, KVI, 570 KVI. I apologize. No, I'm not confusing my Jewish conservative radio host.
Jason's, I wasn't going to even say it.
Jason's on KTTH. I know the difference. Ari's on 570 KVI, host of the Ari Hoffman Show. I'm going to talk to him later, and he's going to be like, I heard that. That's all right. Now I just gave you a free commercial for your show. All right, so we have been talking on the show about how the economy is just like a house of cards. It's just it's like a game of Jenga, you know? You're getting that last little thing, and you're going to pull it out, and it's going to come crumbling down. But I've been thinking a lot lately about the fact that, I mean, I'm hoping something miraculous happens and it doesn't, but if the economy really takes a dive in 2024 during a presidential election year, how is it going to be spawned? How is the White House going to spin that in a presidential election year? As you know, we talked to our friend Zach Abraham from Bulwark Capital every Thursday at this time, and I asked him just that. I've been thinking about, because you've been saying it, you know, that you just feel like it's an inevitability that this Bidenomics economy is going to come crashing down. And in my mind, as a political reporter, I'm like, okay, well, then who is Biden going to blame? Because that might happen in 2024, you know, in an election year. So what is his excuse going to be? What do you think when that happens? How do you think it will be spawned?
Oh, I mean, he's going to try to blame it on Trump. Right. 100%. He's going to blame it on the COVID response. He might even start pulling a Trump and start blaming it on the Federal Reserve for jacking rates too high. But I mean, there just is. I mean, the whole term is just ridiculous. There is no Bidenomics. You just throw money at every single thing you see. And to be fair to him. Right. The reason we have $33 trillion in debt or whatever it is now is because he's not the only president that's done that.
Yeah.
But this whole Biden's strong economy thing, it's nonsense. What you're seeing happen in the economy is what would happen in any economy when you dump 1/3 of your annual GDP in the form of cash out across the entire economy. You know, the other thing, too, is show me an economy that doesn't look, quote unquote, strong when you're running a budget deficit that's 8% of your annual GDP while you have full employment. I mean, that's insane. Bidenomics is spending money we don't have. That you want to summarize Bidenomics, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that for sure they'll find a way to blame Trump. I don't know how they'll do it, but that's like the tried and true. But on the COVID thing, it just bothers the heck out of me that it's everything. Everything is like the scapegoat is COVID. Even though, you know, we're well out of the actual health emergency, like for crime. Oh, well, that's COVID. It's like, okay, it's 2023. When can we stop blaming COVID? Is there anything to that when it comes to the economy that we are still actually seeing the ripple effects of the pandemic?
No, not the actual pandemic itself. I mean, there's some, you know, if you look at private equity, there are some after effects, I would say like aftershocks from the pandemic itself. But for the most part, supply chains have really been unwound, meaning that we got them back on track. So there's not a lot of the and maybe there is some too, but to talk about it is like talking about, you know, it, you know, being worried about a kid with a BB gun when on the street when you're analyzing, you know, violent gun crime, right? I'm not saying that the kid can't shoot somebody and do something wrong with the BB gun, but it's just, it's so small compared to what their response to the pandemic was, right? That's what we're dealing with. It's the response to the pandemic, not the pandemic. And the fact that they, I mean, they so overdid it. The Fed overdid it. We were saying it at the time, going, you can't just dump that much money into an economy and not expect to experience these things. And then the other thing, though, about the strong economy, right, the Bidenomics, to me, I think that they are running a serious risk of walking right into a trap where everybody is saying GDP growth is too strong for a recession. We're like, we don't disagree with you. You're wrong, right? Meaning normally what happens is you get a blowout GDP number the quarter before a recession starts. So we're not saying that means a recession is definitely starting in this next quarter. But what we're saying is, man, everything is lining up and pointing in that direction, right? And then including the historical, you know, the historical record. So it's one of the things that you see in finance all the time that gets really frustrating at times, but people just say these things and they don't do the work, right? They just, it's just anecdotal and they throw it out there as if it's fact and everybody starts, you know, parroting it and repeating it. And you look at them and go, you're not only wrong, you're literally couldn't be more wrong. Meaning this always happens right before a recession.
Yeah. And it's frustrating because it's so serious. I mean, you know, I'm used to politicians just spinning whatever they can to look best for them. But when, you know, Democrats are trying to spin this news as great news and then it gets parroted by the media, then you have millions of Americans who are misled on something that has to do with their ability to survive and thrive. And that's, to me, just deeply wrong. And that's why we have you, Zach.
Yeah. Trying to sort it all out. The other thing is, you really quick, if you see what it does look like to me, that the Fed and Treasury are working in unison. And I can't prove this, but it does. I think that they're doing everything they can to try to stop inflation while supporting the stock market at the same time. It's what it looks like to me. So meaning I think that they're trying as best they can to make things as serene as possible going into next year.
Yeah.
Just because they want to give, you know, they want to give Biden a good opportunity to win. So,
yeah, well, we'll see what happens. All right, Zach Abraham, we appreciate it as always.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
I love that Zach gets it. KnowYourRiskRadio.com, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. If you're interested about learning how to manage your risk, whether you're 30 years out from retirement, probably like I am, or you're getting pretty close. How many years are you out from retirement, you think, Nicole?
Many moons.
It's still important to manage your risk, and especially with everything that's going on and, you know, some of his indicators, he said that the economy is perhaps not going to be well positioned next year. That's a nice way to put it. Worth making sure that your risk is managed. So knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Let's get into questions and comments because I saved our daily subscriber poll question for a sanity check today. Sharon says, did I see Linwood Times say Brandy was an Emmy award-winning journalist? Thought she was a far right-wing winger. Yeah, isn't that nice? The Linwood Times. I am an Emmy award-winning journalist, and I have like more than a dozen Edward R. Murrow awards, but I am still a former journalist. I always make sure to say that. Do we talk about news stories? Do we break news stories sometimes? Yes, yes, yes. But I give my opinion. That's not what I want journalists doing. I am now a political commentator, but yes, I did have a very decorated career as a journalist. Thank you, Linwood Times, for noticing.
I thought that was a good shout out to Linwood Times, yeah, because they did show up at our sign
holding
thing for Fortney and covered it very
Linwood Times. I love what they're doing, yes, and they're fair, and they're actually, yes, like covering things. So, yes, good. Mm-hmm. Matthew Cook with a $10 super chat on the PCC downtown businesses situation. Sarah Nelson came from the private sector. Rest of the council and mayor are career politicians and activists. Notice a trend? Can't make it in the private sector? Go into politics. Yeah, but I mean, Sarah Nelson was actually doing very well in the private sector. So, I mean, she didn't have to go into politics. I think she saw an opportunity really to be able to make a difference. Lieutenant Dan says the road to hell is paved with good intentions. What we are also seeing is a road paved with incompetence and gaslighting. Yes, yes, indeed. Salvador Rob Cheveza. Look at that. I don't know.
Good try.
Nonsense. The stranger told me it's because no one likes Target. Yeah, is that what the stranger said? Target's not doing well because no one likes it? Yeah, I love Target. It's a dangerous place to go. On Mayor Bruce Harrell pushing city contracts for people based on the color of their skin and what's going on in their pants, Tiffany Reek says, I find it ironic that Bruce Harrell says that businesses shouldn't be just into making money when every tax they push through, 90 cents out of every dollar just goes to line bureaucrats' pockets and only 10 cents goes to the actual cause. Yeah, I don't know if those are accurate statistics, but it is very true. The government is into lining its pockets to fund its pet projects. Country Guy says the ship is sinking and City Hall is concerned about the equity practices of the bucket manufacturer. Yeah, a very good point. L3001 USPSA, I'm an engineer working in construction, and I think we're the best at what we do. We get told all the time that we can't be hired because we're not a minority-owned business or a woman-owned business. Government-sponsored discrimination. I could not agree more. On Jonathan Cho's latest run-in with an activist, Brandon Robillard says, Jones poked a hornet. So Jones is the guy's name. At least I think it's a guy. Did I misgender? I don't know. Okay. Because well, Jonathan brought up something about trans ideology, so.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You know?
Okay.
Well. I can't be doing that. Jones poked a hornet's nest with a stick. The bees came out, so he destroys the nest. The bees then sting him. He wants to destroy the bees for hurting him. Just leave the bees alone, dude. Yes. Matthew says, this is the result of academia and the majority of media. And then Matt Gilbert says, yeah, Ari is on KVI. My bad. Okay, on Miranda, the RV goalie life says, shout out from Florida. My husband is retired from SPD 28 years after the 2020 defund debacle. Oh, because we talked about how Florida is recruiting officers from every state. We sold everything and landed in Florida. I love hearing the Florida report with your sister. It brings to light different perspectives. I have met many police officers here, and they have a hard time believing what we went through. Anyway, I'd be interested to find out how many others like me continue to follow you from afar and from where we all are now. I know there's a couple in Texas. And I have heard from someone else in Florida. But yeah, I mean,
in Florida. So yeah, there's a few.
Yeah, Florida is a beautiful place. I mean, it really, really is. And so I know that moving there, it's always been a retirement place. But I think you have people younger and younger moving there for other reasons, just to escape sort of the whatever, whether it's the business climate or the political environment. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you just feel, you know,
it's just a happy place. It feels happy
to
me.
It's not just that. They have other stuff that they're focused on. I mean, I feel like Seattle is so obsessed with politics and ideology. And then you go to Florida, it's like people are just living their lives and they're working and they're not worried so much about what the government is doing or isn't doing for them.
It is stinking humid, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be curious if there's anybody who watches regularly who isn't from Washington State.
Or isn't there and isn't here anymore.
Or isn't here anymore or left or whatever it is. So
Tell us where you're from if you're listening from afar.
Yeah, I have people who message all the time and say, hey, we moved, but don't worry, we're still going to support the show, which I super appreciate. And that is why somebody was questioning yesterday why we talk about national news. We try to sprinkle it in, but usually it's national news that has a broader theme to the point of the show. So
yeah,
we want a little bit of everything.
It still affects us.
Okay, Light Rail says they are finally going to start enforcing fares. Well, sort of. Let's get to it in our closing sanity check. All right. As you know, Sound Transit has had some ups and downs on whether they should actually make sure that people are paying to ride public transportation. And of course, doing away with that practice all goes back to equity. How it was just racist for fare enforcement to be out there actually requiring that people paid to ride something that it costs money to ride. So ridiculous stuff. And then, of course, Sound Transit, the buses and the trains, they just turned into de facto drug dens and homeless encampments. Because, of course, if you're going to stop making sure that people are paying, people are going to ride it. I think somebody called them the other day non-destination riders, which is a very, like, PC way. They're riding, but they don't actually have a destination. So this is the article from King 5. Sound Transit will start issuing violations for passengers who don't pay to ride. Starting on November 15th, Sound Transit fare ambassadors, I'm a fare ambassador, stupid, will issue violations to people who don't pay to ride. One passenger told them, I'm not going to lie, I'm one of the many people who don't pay a fare. I just get on and get on my way. Sure, I should be paying the fare, but let's be honest, most of us don't, said another who was warned about riding without a ticket the day before. According to Sound Transit, it'll give two warnings. Okay. That's where I say they're sort of enforcing it. Two warnings, and that will turn into violations with options for online classes or to pay a fine starting at $50 and going up to $124. By the fifth violation in a 12-month period, it will be a civil infraction. One passenger said, I don't think this will work. I think they need to put up gates or something. Yeah, passenger's like the only one with common sense. And it is true, and their numbers are, I also don't blame people who have money who aren't paying, because it's this system of like, you know, you have people who are breaking the law, who are just treated with kid gloves, and then you're working hard, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're paying into a system that's supporting all these people who aren't paying into a system, and it's not fair. Same reason I don't really blame people who don't want to pay their car tabs, because they've asked how many times for car tabs to be $30, and then the government finds a way around it. I'm very law and order, but sometimes it's like, how much can the working class person be cut down and be treated unfairly before they just decide to take advantage of the system like everyone else? But look, it's not enforcing fair enforcement if people get two warnings. And I also tend to doubt that there's going to be any sort of adequate system for tracking the warnings. And then you're telling me that somebody would have to violate five times in 12 months for them to actually have a civil infraction. And then if you're going to give someone a violation, what's the chance they actually are going to pay it? So I don't know. This is, I think, going to be a hard situation for Sound Transit to unwind what they did based on equity. Now they want to unwind it. Again, we go back to the beginning of the show. We knew this was the outcome. We knew Sound Transit is hurting for money. The environment on Sound Transit is abysmal. Of course, this is the eventual outcome. This is cause and effect. This was also the subject of our daily subscriber poll. We post a poll just for subscribers on Patreon and Locals every single morning before the show. The question was, after stopping the practice due to equity concerns, Sound Transit announced it will once again start citing passengers who don't pay a fare. However, the agency said riders will be given two warnings beforehand. Should Sound Transit issue warnings before giving out a citation? And you guys weren't too thrilled on the idea of two warnings. I did give you three options, though. Yes, but just one warning, not two, or no. Right now, 77% of respondents said no, but there were 20% of people who said, yeah, maybe just one warning would be fine. Chris wrote on Patreon, I assume there are only equity concerns because one demographic is not obeying the rules, commensurate with other demographics. Bill said they all know they need to pay, so what possible reaction is there for allowing them to ride without paying as a warning? This is all equity and woke BS. Let's see. Jill says they know they have to pay. Just kick them off if they don't have the money. I know that sounds mean, but goodness gracious. But I think there are some programs where you can get an Orca card if you are low income. And if you're under the age of 18, you can get free rides as long as you're scanning it and you have the pass and stuff like that. So
I will be interested to see what the statistics that come out of it, who gets ticketed, because it's like getting pulled over for your tabs or getting pulled over for a headlight or whatever they're not doing anymore because they say it's racist. I will be interested to see what they do with the data that comes out of this.
Yes.
Or if they are told to manipulate it.
Yeah, and how many, exactly. What are the end outcomes? And does it change behavior and all of that stuff?
Right.
Let's see some responses on Locals. Weisscastle says, who will enforce this? No one. They don't even enforce real crimes like shoplifting and general vandalism. So it's the fair enforcement and fair ambassadors. But again, I don't think that those are like actual, what are they going to do? Somebody's just going to tell them to kick rocks. Are they going to remove them?
Yeah, they just get a jacket.
Right, exactly. Cookie says, if you use public transit, then you know you're supposed to pay. So why do you need a warning when you're willing to? That's such a good point that so many people have made is, you know you're supposed to pay. Mm-hmm. So what is a warning that, hey, you're supposed to pay? You know you're supposed to pay. That's part of it. You're choosing not to pay. But yeah, maybe you need some sort of actual physical barrier like they do in the New York City subway system. Not that people don't jump the turnstiles, but then they put in those doors that are turnstiles so you actually can't go around it. You could go through the emergency exit. But anyway, so yeah, I agree. Maybe one warning potentially if you've got someone visiting from out of town. Because I will say, the one thing I will say, if you're really like visiting from out of town or out of the country, because there aren't those turnstiles or a physical barrier, it's just sort of like you got to beep the thingy, right? You just got to like beep the thingy when you go in and there's no actual thing you have to go
through. Well, there's also just an app. So you could just sit there being ready to hit go on your app.
Be cool. Every week on the show, you talk about potential ways to break the law.
Something. I don't know.
Anyway,
I will be curious also if they're going to do this enforcement during Seahawks games, things like that, because that's when people actually ride. Right. Nobody rides during the week. Yep. Not very many.
No, they're going to enforce it when working class people are riding.
They're not going to have these little fair enforcement people in this like sea of Seahawks fans. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. So anyway, it's just insane to think for Sound Transit to believe that it could stop enforcement, not have the results and the outcomes that, mm-hmm. again, cause and effect. And now they're going to try to wind it back in far too late, obviously. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. We have a wonderful episode of Sundays with Subscribers. If you're not a subscriber already, it's just $5 a month. You help us focus on doing this show full time and expanding it. But also you get access to our Sunday episode. This Sunday on the show, we have Congressman Adam Smith, who is the chair of the House Armed, or the ranking member, rather, of the House Armed Services Committee. And also our friend Ari Hoffman is going to join us to talk about his efforts to expose Hamas sympathizers who are working in colleges and in other public jobs. So we have both of those coming up on the Sunday show. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. See subscribers on Sunday. The rest of you, still love you, but I won't see you until Monday at noon.